intend to do with the mini-set? Greg asked. Tell Brennart that the Yamagata team's in his backyard. What else? Won't that make it seem as if we're pushing him to take bigger risks than necessary? Avoiding Greg's eyes, Anson replied, Brennart's no feeb. He'll know how much risk he can handle. Can the mini-sat operate in this level of radiation? The satellite's only got to work for a few minutes, Anson said. Just long enough to tell Brennart that the Japs are in his lap. He's got to know that. It's vital. Greg wondered what Brennart would do with the information. It's just going to put more pressure on him, Greg thought. Might push him to take risks he wouldn't ordinarily take. Doug is out there with him. This might put Doug in even more danger than he's in already. Greg felt frozen inside, not daring to let his true emotions show, even to himself.
I think my ribs are broken, said Keiji Inoguchi.
Yazaruhara heard the pain in his co-pilot's voice. He himself had been unconscious for at least several seconds. The landing in the mountainous darkness had been a disaster. Their craft had touched down on what had seemed like smooth ice, but somehow the craft had tumbled at the last moment and come crashing down on its side. Now, as the two men sat still strapped into their seats, bundled in their heavily armored spacesuits, Hara thought how like a dream the crash had been. Everything had happened so slowly, gracefully almost, like a kabuki dancer's delicate movements. But the pain was real. His head throbbed, and he tasted hot, salty blood in his mouth. He could hear Inoguchi's ragged, shallow breathing in his helmet earphones. Every breath must be an agony for him, Hara thought. A dream of pain and darkness. A nightmare. What was it that the old Lama said? What if this life is nothing more than a dream within a dream? Yes, what if? At least he didn't seem to be bleeding anywhere except inside his mouth. He had banged his head hard on the inside of his helmet, but thankfully the helmet was well padded. Nothing broken, Hara said to himself. But if I have a concussion, I'll be vomiting soon. That should be delightful inside the helmet. Inoguchi groaned, forcing Hara to ignore his own fears. Can you move your arms at all? He asked his companion.
Yes, a little.
In the dim emergency lighting of the cockpit, Hara saw Inoguchi's arms move feebly. He tried to think.
We might as well stay where we are, Keiji, he said. At least until the radiation goes down and the base puts a commsat over us. Yes, said Inoguchi painfully. I don't think I'll be of much help to you.
That's all right. We'll just sit here and call for help when the satellite queries us.
At least we don't have to worry about fire, Inoguchi said, trying to sound brave. When I flew on Earth, fire was my one persistent fear.
Hara nodded at the man's confession, but did not reveal his own. Ever since coming to the moon, Hara had suffered nightmares about choking to death for lack of air. Mount Wasser.
Killifer to Brennart, Doug heard in his earphones.
Go ahead, Jack, said Brennart. His voice sounded tired to Doug, scratchy and strained.
Just got a blast from Moonbase, Killifer said. Yamagata's landed a team on the other side of Mount Wasser.
Doug felt a jolt of shock and saw Brennart's space-suited figure stiffen. Their communications gear was in the first shelter, where Killifer presided.
Play it for me, Brennart commanded.
Over the suit-to-suit frequency, Doug heard,
Anson to Brennart. Yamagata Lobber has landed on the far side of Mount Wasser from your position. Definitely a crewed ship. They're obviously going to try to make a claim for the area. Foster, the safety of your team is of primary importance, as you are aware. But I thought you should know about this move of Yamagata's. As soon as the radiation drops to an acceptable...
Harsh, ragged static drowned out her words.
That's all we got, Killifer said.
Brennart huffed.
That's plenty. There's another message, though, said Killifer. Piped in parallel with Anson's.
What is it?
It's for Mr. Stavanger.
For me? Doug blurted. Brennart said nothing.
Doug, this is Greg.
Doug was astonished to hear his brother's voice.
I'm at Moonbase. I'll be taking over the director's slot when Anson leaves. I don't want you to take any unnecessary chances out there. Do you understand me? Play it safe and come back alive.
Doug felt embarrassed.
My brother, he mumbled to Brennard and the others. Half-brother, actually.
He'll be the director of Moonbase in a few days, Brennard said, his voice flat.
I had no idea, said Doug.
A dead silence fell upon the bare little shelter. The four of them sat on the bunk edges, the only places to sit, staring at each other like a quartet of cyclops.
We've got to get back to the mountaintop before the Japanese do, Brennard said at last.
Do you think they try it while the radiation's still so high? Doug asked.
They sent the team here while the radiation flux is pretty damn near maximum, Brennard pointed out. They must have hardened suits.
And equipment, Greenberg chimed in.
And we don't, said Rhee.
Doug turned to face Brennard.
What should we do?
For a long moment, Brennard said nothing. Finally,
you said that legally we need two people at the summit.
That's only if we intend to keep a team there.
The minimum number is two, said Doug. That's what the Moscow Treaty calls for.
But if we're just going to set up a monitoring station? Rhee asked.
Doug spread his gloved hands. As long as the station can function automatically, it doesn't matter how many people are used to set it up.
All right, then, Brennard said. I'll go alone. You can't, Doug snapped.
Brennard planted his fists on the hips of his spacesuit.
Do I have to remind you, Mr. Stavanger, that I'm in command here? Even if your brother's going to be my boss in a few days, I'm still in charge of this team.
Trying to keep his voice light, Doug replied,
We all know that, sir. I simply meant that the radiation out there will kill you before you could get the job done.
Maybe, Brennard admitted. But the job's got to be done.
You have to kill yourself for the corporation? Rhee asked.
Brennard turned toward her.
Like the man says, everybody dies sooner or later. Do you think my life would be worth much if Yamagata gets to claim this whole territory?
That's crazy, Rhee said.
While Brennard and Rhee argued, Doug went to the shelter's computer terminal and called up the medical file.
It's my job, Brennard was saying. My responsibility.
Rhee said, Oh, I get it. Machismo.
Her voice dripped loathing.
No, said Brennard. It's very practical. I get paid for results. If Yamagata takes this territory, I might as well be dead professionally.
And he doesn't have any other life, Doug realized, tapping out numbers on the screen. Rhee might despise the idea, but for men like Brennard, this is a way of life.
It's all they've got. The time in between missions is waiting time, limbo, useless.
Call it machismo or stubbornness or even stupidity, but it's the hard-headed ones like Brennard who got the job done.
My father must have been like that, Doug thought. He died rather than endanger the rest of the people in Moonbase.
The question is, Doug said, for himself as much as for Rhee and the others, is the claim to this region worth risking your life over?
Let's stop this right here, Brennard said.
Somebody's got to get back up that mountain, and I've decided that I'll do it. End of discussion.
Wait, Doug said.
I said end of discussion, Brennard growled.
But I think there might be a way we can get this job done at much lower risk.
How?
Pointing to the numbers on the screen, Doug said, I've just calculated the exposure doses based on the background data in the medical file and a rough estimate of the time needed to get up to the mountaintop again.
Brennard came across the shelter and leaned over Doug's shoulder to peer at the screen.
Doug said, To get this job done, somebody's got to find the astronomical equipment, load it onto the hopper, refuel the hopper, jump up to the summit, set up the equipment, and then fly back down here, right?
Right.
Okay. Here's my estimate of the times involved for each task.
Pretty rough estimates.
Smiling inside his helmet, Doug said,
It's the best I could do. I've tried to include the shielding our suits provide.
It adds up to more than a lethal dose, Rhee saw.
Greenberg got off his bunk and joined the rest of them, but said nothing.
But what if we break the job down into its component tasks and let different people handle each task? Doug suggested.
What of it? Rhee asked.
Working the keyboard as he spoke, Doug said,
That way, each individual gets only a fraction of the radiation exposure that one person would get if he tried to do the whole job by himself. See?
Whoever flies the hopper up to the mountaintop still gets a big dose,
Rhee pointed out.
But it's not a lethal dose, said Doug.
At least that's what the numbers show.
If everything goes exactly as you've plotted it,